Psalm 139. This is one of my favorite psalms. David writes this, and it's a psalm that is perfect to get this down. I have this in the back of my mouth. It's a psalm that when you see God and yourself right, everything else kind of falls into place. Even if you go through hardships and struggles, you're seeing the world right. But when you veer away from any of these lines, these paragraphs, these phrases that David is talking about here, that's when we get into all kinds of, oftentimes, psychological issues and problems. Veer off the path, we go to the left instead of the right, or the right instead of the left, and the Y, and instead of following the yellow road that leads to heaven, and according to the Word, we end up going our own way, and things get messed up. But this psalm is a psalm that's showing us the right way to think about the world, who God is, and our relationship with God, and how we're under. So let me read that. Pray and pray. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down, when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You hem me in. And that's a good hemming in. You hem me in, behind and before, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's high. I can't attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend, if I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed and I go down to Sheol, it's great. You're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall be, your left hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is bright as the day. Darkness is as light to me. You formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your words. My soul knows it very well. My frame wasn't hidden from me when I was being made and seemed intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them. Days that were formed, but as yet there was none. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sun. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I am weak, and I am still, and stand up. Search me, O God, and know my heart, and try me, and know my thoughts, and see if there be any. Some of your translations will say, wicked way. So, see if there be any grievous way. Father, this is your word. scriptures besides all Psalm 139, because I want to lay out the foundation for this faith. I'm doing this because I want you to see it's not like we have our own church and we're just the kind of spiritual stuff here. And then there's the other stuff, kind of the real stuff we deal with out in the world, that the counselors and the psychiatrists and psychologists have to help us deal with. I want you to see how rooted these things are in spiritual issues. Have you ever had a thought, so when you try to introduce this to your children, is this going to be a tight pack? So if somebody takes something, there's more that can be said about these things. I'm always especially concerned about young people and children who will hear something and for the next 10, 20, think a certain direction because it wasn't clarified. I can't say it anymore. So go to your moms and dads and ask them and feel free to here goes. Have you ever had a thought that was difficult to get out of your mind? Have you ever gone to bed saying and asked yourself, did I close the garage door? Did I lock the front door? Did I get all my homework done or like there's still people? 99.9% sure that you did, but that last shred of doubt causes you to get up out of bed, go downstairs, and be sure that you did lock the door. So you climb out of bed, go check, and then you jump in bed, you quickly fall asleep, and you forget about it. Well, no problem. That's normal. And many of us have it. Let me just show you how many of you know what I'm talking about. But have you ever known anyone or have you ever struggled in any of these ways? After checking the door, come back, you lie in bed, and you wonder, did I make absolutely certain that somebody in the room was certain? Did I make absolutely certain that the door was locked? Fight the anxiety starting to grow in you. You're trying to fall asleep and you're still doubting and wondering. But eventually you succumb to that cycle and you start to go and check. And then you reach it, the door in your mind until you fall asleep under the exhausted degree. Next one, you worry that your doors or counters aren't clean. These aren't clean enough to prevent you. So although you know your fear is irrational, you spend hours of the day cleaning your doors. Next, you stop driving because you're afraid of fear. You're uncertain that you might hit someone, although you're driving recklessly. You stop going to church because of an overwhelming fear that you're going to spontaneously yell out something blasphemous. If you're not here right now, that's why I think you're still here, because of me. You feel unable to throw anything away, especially magazines, newspapers accumulated around your house. You can't, you just have a hard time throwing anything out. And the other name for that is that person is a gorgeous thing. We had a lady like this in our neighborhood, and Bonnie and Rose went over to help her, and now Arius, and guess what? In a matter of months, it's all over. Now, these problems may seem extreme, but as many as 3% of Americans wrestle with this, they struggle with this in some way. That would mean we have 100 people. Three of us would have key issues in one or more of these areas. What causes this kind of pain? And is it primarily spiritual? Is it a sin issue? Is it a body, brain issue, where there are particular portions of our brain that go has a circuitry that keeps firing and firing in an endless loop, compelling us to carry out certain behaviors? Well, these are the kinds of questions that we need to have the answer to. We're going to have our heads and our hearts screwed on in the right way so that we can be happy. that's what the word disorder implies. Why would we think that way, or why would I say that? Because it ignores the spiritual part of who we are. Most of the people who are dealing with this out there in the world see us only as biological creatures. That is, we are only body, and we have no soul. And so we don't have to think about that. Those heart issues, soul issues, spirit issues, that's all put aside. We're going to deal with everything from a physiological, biological perspective. Then we're going to go into what causes it. That's when we'll start to get into more of the scriptures and figure out an approach that does justice to the person as a whole, body and soul. And hopefully, you're going to just gain a lot more insight about how to approach issues like this or another struggle. So, first of all, three definitions. Under what is OCD? What is OCD? The key features of OCD include, first of all, OCD, obsession. Obsession and compulsions. Obsessions and compulsions that are severe enough to be time-consuming in your life, to cause you noticeable distress or significant impairment in your daily routine. You find that this keeps coming in your mind throughout the day. What are obsessions? Obsessions, second definitions, obsessions are frequent ideas or thoughts or impulses or images that are seen as intrusive and inappropriate, causing this noticeable anxiety and stress. These are ideas, thoughts, impulses, images that aren't just excessive worries about your actual problems, like our finances, work, school, things like that. The person who has an obsession with something experiences anxiety and hates that. They don't like this problem. So they try to push it down, push their thoughts and impulses, and kind of like Star Wars, neutralize it so it doesn't have an effect. They do that with another thought or another action. That's the compulsion side. They initially have an obsession. I keep doing this thing over and over and over and over again, whatever it is. Do you get that? And so how can I get away from it? Here's how I'm going to do it. And now we have our compulsions. And that's how we're trying to deal with it. Now, common obsessions include things like this. Frequent thoughts about contamination. This is one of the biggest ones, if not the biggest one, in our country. That is the biggest obsession. Howard Hughes, remember Howard Hughes, that big plane that he made? Fearing that anything he would touch would have germs and he wouldn't shake people's hands. He was very careful. People were trying to kill him. So he had to be careful about what he ate, what he wore, all his rituals and traditions, suit, shoes and socks, showering and bathing, and all that stuff. He literally went crazy because of this. Because he left the framework of thinking of solving. Or repeated doubts, wondering whether he turned off the iron or hit someone while driving because you don't know him. A need to have things in a particular order all the time, or to do a task just right. An aggressive or horrific impulse to hurt someone or shout obscenities in a bed. Sexual imagery. An irrational, persistent fear that I'm developing a life-threatening illness. And these are so, we've all fought but this is obsessive. Hoarding the abilities to discard stuff, not having that in the brain. Excessive cleanliness based on one's fear and control. The, what I call the good enough syndrome. When is doing whatever? When is good enough? Good enough. So there's this ongoing needing, strength, fixing, but it's fixations. obsessing with numbers or letters in the alphabet, often stemming from a desire to possess more than you have or to try to control something based out of a fear. You see how fears and desires for control play into all this. But they'll do things with numbers and letters, like exponential. They'll count exponentially about something, like not wanting this many people in the world or wanting this much money. And they'll go 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, 16, Are there things, compulsions are things that are being done because of the obsession? The obsession, if you don't know the compulsions, these are the result in how people respond with the obsession. The repetitive behaviors, the mental gymnastics of the world, and that often leads to these rituals. And their goal is to prevent all the long term, prevent the anxiety, the stress. The person doesn't engage in these behaviors because they like them. Sometimes they feel driven to performance in order to reduce the anxiety, reduce the stress, and reduce the obsession. So, some of the contamination obsession, say, might wash their hands 30 times a day. We're not talking about medical staff, doctors, nurses, caretakers that have to do that. We're talking about average folks who don't work in anything. Someone with an intrinsic, unwanted, aggressive impulses may count to 24, then count backwards. They may do the alphabet or then backwards. And these compulsions are clearly excessive, and they're often not even connected in a real way with the very issue that they're obsessing over, and that they're designed to control some stuff. Some common compulsions include repetitive behaviors, checking, and then rechecking some. As I said, washing, cleaning, wanting, or demanding assurances from others that must be useful, ordering, arranging stuff, or repeating, doing and undoing, and redoing certain tasks in an exact sequence. I had a cousin older than me who loved him. He was great. He was my model in life, an example of my role. He was in junior high. We don't have this here, but those in the industrial community in Chicago is a very tight community. And lots of people knew each other. They all knew the churches they went to, and they went to a lot of the same schools. And they would, it was such a safe and open community, and a lot of people didn't have fences. You could, to get to 104th Street Christian School, cut through instead of going around the blocks to get there. You would cut through people's yards. And one day you would cut through these sequence of yards. Another day you'd go this way. Another day you'd go that way. But here's the obsessive part. If he went this way to get to school, guess what you had to do to get home? Same thing in reverse. And that's the kind of obsessive compulsive type of behavior. The mental mats we're going to talk about how people decide to make that work. There's a big fat book called the DSM. Have any of you heard of the DSM? It's the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual. It's for psychiatrists, psychologists, and counselors what a pharmacology book would be for, say, doctors and pharmacologists, those who work in pharmacies. The compulsions that we just went through are descriptions of OCD in the DSM manual that helps us, the book helps us zoom in on the experience of somebody who's suffering with this, and it starts to shape the person who's trying to help or help themselves. It starts to shape the information that we gather, asking questions, so that we can figure out the extent, how far this has gone, and how severe it is, with whatever issue that they're wrestling with. At the same time, you need to remember that book, DSM, Diagnostics and Statistics, is this. It is a description of what's happening. why, for instance, somebody struggles with having these obsessive thoughts and compulsive behaviors. To answer that, as Christians, we need a biblical view of the human nature that gives us then the foundation for figuring out a biblical approach to what this issue is and answer it. Second, not to steal the last point, but we need to take it and steal it. What causes this? A biblical view of human beings acknowledges that there is an inner part to me. I'm not just my body, my physiology. There's more to me than that. There's that inner part. But then there is the body, the outer part that you can touch and see and feel. So that's why we say, the doctor, he says, what's hurting? We don't say leg or we say, what? 4%. My leg is hurt. Well, who's my? Well, that's your soul, that's your spirit. And you're saying something in my body is not right. Something is going on. Dealing with the inner and outer aspect, the way that we're designed, it's the way that we function together as we live in our body and soul. And as we live before God and others, one term that's used in the Bible over and over to describe the inner part of the human is our heart. In Greek, it's splenkmizomai, and that means in Greek, in our culture, we say heart. In Greek culture, splenkmizomai was my guts. My guts. So we say that sometimes, right? Oh man, my guts. Guts are just chewing over an accident or something like that. You're not even sick, but your mind, your heart, they say the guts. In both the Old and the New Testaments, the heart refers to the basic inner orientation of the person who lives either in covenant obedience following the Lord or in disobedience before God. And you find this early on in the Bible. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul and strength. These commands that I give you today are to be on your heart. Psalm 14. The fool says, there is no God. Where does he say that? In his heart. Matthew 5. Blessed are the children of the mountain. Blessed are the pure in gracious of God. Matthew 6. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The term heart says that at core, we are all, everyone in the world, we are all worshipers of something. Either the creator in obedience or created things, including ourselves, in disobedience, as you might have known as one. God designed us to express worship, the worship of our hearts through our bodies. And our thoughts and emotions and behaviors are all expressed through our bodies. We raise hands, we sway, we bounce, spring up and down. I saw some of the worship leaders doing that this morning. They all begin in our heart. The thoughts, the emotions, the actions, you see those things listed before you. I pray that the eyes of your heart be enlightened. They are dark and they're darkened in their understanding and separated from the light of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of our hearts. In Hebrews 4, the word of God is alive and active, sharper than any two-edged sword. Penetrates the dividing of even soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts. Judges the thoughts and attitudes of others. Our emotions, we see that even with God. Genesis 6, the Lord regretted that he had made human beings out of the earth, and his heart was troubled. Proverbs 13, hope deferred, hope for something, but hope deferred makes one sick. lot of the good stored up in his heart. And the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart too. For the mouth speaks what the heart is. 6. Obey them like the slaves of Israel. So obey them not only to win their favor when their eyes are on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing good actions, doing the will of God, and the works that are achieved from the heart. You see that our bodies, they just don't have, our bodies just don't have the time to say whether our thoughts, our emotions, our actions honor God, and yet, sorry, our bodies don't have the time to say whether our thoughts, emotions, and actions are the Son of God. Yet, the scriptures recognize that our bodily weaknesses are the limitations that our bodies put on us. And that's why our obedience to Jesus may be sometimes more difficult when we're struggling with the weakness in our bodies. Alzheimer's, dementia, it could be sometimes be amazed at what percentage of emotional issues, spiritual issues can be brought, but they are there for us to come. It's hard to get a good night's sleep, and it can change the way we live. But our bodies do affect us in our flesh with our spirit. So, in order to overcome OCD, we want to be able to tell the difference between potential body stresses, stressors, and the active responses from our bodies. You see, most of us tend to overemphasize ourselves or other people. We tend to overemphasize one or the other. And that gets into giving and getting bad and imbalanced in the life situation. Go overboard and saying this is purely a heart issue, when 1 out of 10 issues clearly is physiological. Or we tend to just focus on body issues to the exclusion. So to avoid these extremes, we need to ask, what are the potential influences and pressures that we throw my mind, my brain, my body, and what are the potential influences that from my heart or my worship? We're going to go through brain now and then heart. Take a look at these and just try to see the distinctions. We also know that there's no one way. Are there possible brain distinctions? Family and genetic studies of people who are wrestling with OCD show a higher incidence rate among identical twins out of studies of young twins. Family genetic studies show a higher incidence of OCD in identical twins versus fraternal twins, suggesting that there's some predisposition to obsessional behavior that might be inherent. We can't draw any definite conclusions to that, but it should at least make us aware that a person may be born with certain physical dispositions or predispositions to struggle in this world. It was interesting, the early 1900s, when there was the influenza epidemic. It gave us some of the first evidences of obsessive compulsive symptoms. And they didn't call it that then, but really you can see from the symptoms that we used then, that could be associated with specific parts of our brain. Some patients develop not only Parkinson's-like symptoms, such as muscle tremors and slow breathing, but also psychological or psychiatric symptoms, including obsessive compulsive behavior. When they did the autopsies on these patients, they showed that in the brain, basal ganglia, they showed that there was a set of unique structures in the brain that were different than others. OCD is also a result of head trauma from accidents in children, but up to adults, where the cortical system reacted with the biological side of the strep throat. Antibiotics not only resolve the strep throat, all this mean? It means that these examples at least suggest some principles are biological based, the biological processes. So, we need to take that into consideration. Just as we would acknowledge there are certain medical conditions that can contribute to depression, such as blood pressure. In addition, what are called live action brain scans, PET scans, MRI scans, and so on, show an overactivity in the part of the brain, basically, in the frontal regions of the brain. When a person who struggles with OCD, the brain just scans to become as a disease. And this hyperactivity in the brain is a sort of color, tends to decrease as some scientists that neurotransmitter serotonin, I've heard of that, is involved in those because of the effectiveness of medications like Zoloft, which are also for OCD symptoms. Yet, while the neurochemicals like serotonin and others may be part of the bodily depression involved in OCD, which is not a good way to say, this is the ultimate cause of it. Because there's this heat in the heart and the body, you know that there's always going to be some biological intervention, visible, more or less measurable intervention between spirit and body. Brain scans just reveal this, but they can't confirm the changes in the brain that cause the obsessive behavior, the ritualistic compulsions, pre-existing ultimate. Why is the second person's anxiety? got to be certain about this. Here's a person that feels unable to live with uncertainty. From snow jumping, I'm not certain I'll be able to get to it. I'm not certain these foods are healthy. Here's a person who's unable to feel or think in certain uncertain ways. They need total assurance. They seem exhausted with certain knowledge. OCD has been described interestingly as the doubt of the disease. People with OCD usually doubt what they see with their own eyes, so they attempt to control their environment or other people by always checking and rechecking and rechecking. That is, they develop a checking ritual to get rid of doubt and to be certain. They can't live with gray. Things must be black and white. See this done in the Asperger's syndrome. Asperger's. Everything must be this way. And for folks who have been trained theologically, they're trained in seminary, and they couldn't deal with complexity of Scripture. We are either saved by faith or we're saved by works. James seems to say that works have a big part of it. James shouldn't be in the Bible. This is really true. This is true. I don't like the idea that Paul says that men should be in the body in certain specific areas. So they literally take it exactly and cut that out of it. They'll have a book that the front of the whole book is good. It's one chapter. They can't see that way. They will literally unbind the book, take that chapter out, and rebind it. This one they'll have to be first. And then, because they don't want to be guilty of these that are restrained, then they give the book to someone else. These are wonderful people. I love them. Some of you know them. I love them too. But this is such a compulsive, obsessive behavior that it leads them to certain compulsions. And so they have this need for certainty that's tied to the demand for control. And ironically, the attempt to control is not a white people. People get past it by their struggle to gain certainty and control. For some, their standard of absolute certainty brings about their brings doubt about their salvation, even undermines their ability to speak. How do I know if what I just said was true and accurate? I better keep silent than saying something and having it not be absolutely correct. Another facet of certainty or control is this perceived need for reward. And this is compulsive. I'm sure ladies have cabinets of guys your dishes in one place, bigger dishes, smaller dishes, coffee stuff, silverware, you don't have forks and knives, it's all mixed together. There's that kind of that's a general healthy kind of thing. That there's the kind of also where my forks have to all be in the same slot on top of each other. With the blade, the thongs facing to the left, never to the right. Oh, the spouse put it in the ring, and I gotta take a turn. That's the obsession in terms of the compulsive behavior. Now what are they doing? Whenever their wife is the initial nutritious, doesn't lose that individual. But if the wife does, and they're in bed or in another place, and they hear that, they go and they go to the floor and just check out. That's the obsessive part of the focus. Then there's the whole issue of perfection, the desire to be or do things just right. And you see, all these are kind of integrated, right? Because there's a fear of being wrong. This is a dangerous one. The focus here ends up being on works, a works orientation, and works righteousness, pressure to do everything just right. Now, this could have come. There's a whole issue of nature versus nurture. Is this just the way I am by nature? thought enter their minds? How could I think such a thing? Could I really do that? It's outrageous that I could have thought something like that. But what if I did? And this hypersensitivity is followed by fear, which is paralysis and anxiety that leads to a self-oriented, mad scramble to overcome and neutralize the thought by compensating it with other thoughts. And that's the compulsive side of this. I can't make things right. I can pay for my sin debt by doing this ritual. So, OCD has that. It's all up to me mentality.